you ever come across the expression, all you need is love? All you need is love, yeah? Lots of nods in the room, okay? First made famous by the Beatles back in the 60s. But ever since then, it's sort of become, it's infiltrated the whole of our culture. Perhaps the whole of the English-speaking world. It's such a cute, pithy little phrase that you can remember and use for whatever you might like to use it for. And so you see it, for example, printed on T-shirts or on mugs or on mouse mats, or people use it as passwords, or people are speaking it all the time. It's lyrics in songs, isn't it? It's you can even go to Dunnell Mill and you can get a poster printed and stick it on your bedroom wall or your living room wall. All you need is love. And one of the advantages of it is, isn't it just as ambiguous as it is clear? You know, you hear all you need is love and immediately you know what it means. But if you ask the next person to describe what it means, probably they'll have a slightly different definition to what you mean by it, you see. What do we mean by all you need is love? Anyway, this phrase has sort of become a part of our culture, hasn't it? It's everywhere we look, everywhere we turn. But it's not just in the world, it creeps its way into the church as well. So if you watched, for example, the royal wedding last year, Harry and Meghan, then you would have heard that speaker steal the show, really, with his sermon, and urge people for 13 minutes, look, harness the power of love. Harness that redeeming power of love. And when you do, you'll see the world changed. And to make his message, even used words from this letter that we've read, 1 John. He was saying things like, whoever loves has been born of God. And if you don't love, you don't know God. And using those phrases, it made it sound as if love is all that matters to be a Christian. So long as you love, you're a Christian. So long as you love, you're right with God. That was his message. And by the end of his very stirring message, 13 minutes stood in front of the royals and really half the world, it felt like. You know, you had politicians, celebrities, sports stars, pop stars, tweeting and putting it on social media. Wow, if this is what Christianity is, sign me up. If all you need is love, I'll be part of it straight in. Is love then really all you need to be a Christian? Is love really all that it is about, becoming a Christian? Well, at first glance, so these words we've read today, it might seem so. Look at how the section starts. Verse 11, this is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. It sounds like John's taking us off in the same direction. Look, Christians, you've got to love one another. And this is the very beginning of the message you heard. You want to be a Christian? You've got to be loving. But does he make love the sole qualifying virtue? Does he make love all that it is to be a Christian? Well, let's consider the example that he then gives. Verse 12, he says, do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. Now, if you don't know the story of Cain, don't worry too much. He's the first murderer in the Bible. He comes up on like the second page of the Bible and he murders his brother. And for John's readers, Cain would have been, it'd spring instantly to mind. They know who Cain is. He's the first murderer in the Bible. But why did Cain murder his brother? Well, John says, because he belonged to the evil one. Cain was almost like he wasn't his own man. There was somebody above him that had control of him. He belonged to this person. And this person that was above him was the evil one. I wonder what sort of person he is. Well, the clue's in the name, isn't it? His character is evil. To do evil. To act out evil. To act for the sake of hurting and dragging down other people. He was the evil. And because that's his character, because Cain belonged to him, that's the way Cain acted. So, read verse 12. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one. Why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil, like that one who was over him. And his brothers were righteous. So, in this example, John is showing that Cain's outward actions, the thing that Cain does, are part of they're a consequence of a part of a little chain that he's in. Who does Cain belong to? He belongs to the evil one. And the character of the evil one is to do evil. So that's why Cain does evil. And John says, now let's map that onto the experience of a Christian. Look at verse 14. We know that we, now talking to Christians, he says, we know that we have passed from death to life. In other words, we don't belong to death, we belong to life. Who is the one who can be described as life itself? Well, that is Jesus, or God, the Creator. We don't belong to death, we belong to God. And what is his character like? Perhaps one of the most basic statements you could make about God is that God is love. And so if that's God's character, the one that we belong to, he's saying, so our actions should reflect his character. Verse 14, we know that we have passed from death to life because we love our brothers. Anyone who does not love remains in death. And so God's character of love, should affect the character of the people who belong to him. So love isn't then the sole qualifying virtue. Love isn't the thing that makes you a Christian. Love is like the evidence that shows that you're a Christian. So consider this illustration. Say you go to watch the football. Let's say you go down to Leicester City, okay? And it's Leicester City against, I don't know, Wolverhampton, okay? To be honest, I really don't follow football, so I've not even got a clue what league or division Leicester are in and who they might play. But let's, for the sake of example, Leicester against Wolves, okay? Now, you stood in the stands. How do you know which players are on the team that you're supporting? How do you know which players are the Leicester players? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? All the Leicester players, what are they wearing? Go on, there was an hand went up at the back. The football shirts, that's right, yeah. They're wearing the football shirts, and they're all wearing a particular colour. And that colour shirt is what makes them part of that team. Now, let's say you twig this the first time you go, and you say, ah, you know, I'd like to go on that pitch. So next week, you buy one of the kits, and you turn up wearing your kit, okay? Now, you've got the shirt on. And you've got the shorts on, and you even buy the socks, and you even buy the same boots as the striker. You get the shin pads and everything. You go all the way and get a captain's armband, okay? This will look good, okay? And you turn up to the stadium, and when the kickoff starts, you jump onto the pitch. I'm in. I'm playing. I've got the kit on, aren't I? I'm ready to play with you. And the manager would be like, well, not the manager. You won't even get to speak to the manager. The stewards will be all over you. Get off. It's not about having the kit. It's about whether you've got the contract with the team. Are you really in the team or not? And the kit really is just a demonstration that actually, yeah, you've got that contract. You've got that agreement with the team. You've got that agreement with the manager. You've got that job as their football player. And so wearing the kit is like love, you see. It's the outward show, the outward demonstration that I am part of this team. I am part of the Christian church. We wear this kit of love. And just like that illustration, you know, you might look around the world and there'll be a lot of people who do a real good job of wearing that kit almost just as effectively as we do at times. And sometimes we wonder, does that kit make them part of the team? We've got to remember that it's not what makes a person a Christian. What makes a person a Christian is their relationship with God. Their relationship with the manager, the team boss, as it were. And our love, our outward actions, are a demonstration that we've become part of that team. So love is not all you need, like the Beatles sang. It's not all you need. First, you need that relationship with God. And then love becomes the outward action, the sign of that. But let's be equally careful not to swing the other way. Because John did, after all, start this section saying, we should love one another. Let's go back to that football illustration. Let's say you stood there watching, and you've got the Blues on one side and the Oranges on the other, and halfway through the game, one of the guys from the Leicester team wanders in with a red T-shirt on. And the manager says, what are you doing? And he says, oh, I got this from when I used to play for Manchester United. So, I just thought I'd prefer to wear this. You know, it looks better. I like the colours or whatever. What would the manager say? What are you doing? Get off. You wear our kit or you're not in the team. And so it's not the kit that puts him in the team, but if he's not going to wear the kit, equally he's not part of the team. And for Christians, yeah, we agree that, look, it's not love that gets us in this, into the church. It's not love that gets us right with God. But if we're not going to love, then equally, we can't be right with God. We've got to be willing and ready to wear this outward demonstration, as it were, of the inward reality. So as Christians, we seek to push back against that cultural truth. Where the world seems to say, all you need is love. We want to say, no, love is not all you need. First, you need the relationship with God the Father. But we've also got to be careful not to push too far. Because as Christians, we do need to be careful to be loving others. And that's going to be a real point of self-assessment this morning. Am I really, as a Christian, one who can be described as one who loves? Now, back to that little lyric, all you need is love. What did I say was the strength of that lyric? Why is it taking the world by storm? Why does everybody like to take all that little verse and use it as they wish? It's because it can mean almost anything you want it to mean. So for one person, they might say, all you need is love. And they might mean, all I need is a girlfriend. And another person might say, all you need is love. And what they mean is, I don't need one girlfriend, I'll have as many as I can manage. You see, these two people have taken the same phrase and used it to mean totally opposite things. Some person might take all you need is love and they might mean it as live and let live. Just let other people live their lives as they want to live. That's what love is. Other people might take the same phrase, all you need is love, and they mean love yourself. Don't let anybody live in the way they want to live if it's going to impede the way you want to live. You see, two people have taken the same phrase and use it to mean opposite things. Some people might take all you need is love and mean it, all you need to do is to love others. Some people might take all you need is love and mean all I need to receive is love to make my life worthwhile. So the same phrase is so ambiguous. It can mean anything to anyone who wants to pick it up and use it for themselves. Now, when John, in this letter, says, Christians, we should love one another. The thing he's careful to do is he's careful then to define what he means by love. He's not going to leave it up to us. He's not going to leave it to the whim of every individual. I want to do love to others. Other person might say, I want to receive love from other people. No, John's not going to leave us wallowing in that indecision. John's going to provide a definition for us. Look at verse 16 then. This is how we know what love is. This is the definition of love. When he says, Christians, you ought to love one another, this is the definition. This is what he means. And the definition he gives is not a dictionary definition. He doesn't use nouns and verbs and adjectives to describe it as best he can. He gives us a living, breathing, worked example. This is how we know what love is, verse 16. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. This is the definition of love. Jesus Christ laying down his life for us. What sort of love do we see in that example? Three things I want to suggest this morning about the characteristics of this example of love that Jesus has given us. First, it's a love that is costly. It's a costly love. Try and answer this question. What would be the most precious thing that Jesus could give? What would be the most precious thing that Jesus could give? Perhaps to you in your situation. What would be the most precious thing that Jesus could give to you? Now, we're going to get to that answer. But as we think about getting to that answer, let's just consider who Jesus is.
Yeah.
Jesus is creator of the whole world. Not just creator, but sustainer of everything that exists. We're here, living, breathing, talking, listening this morning, because Jesus sustains our existence. Jesus is the one who put the stars in the sky. He put the sun in the right place. He set the earth on its orbit. Jesus is the one who in his life had power to bring healing to sick bodies. He brought sight to blind eyes. He put strength in weak, lame limbs. He even brought death. He even brought life to dead bodies. Jesus has all power to do anything he chooses in this physical world. He has total control of all creation. It would cost him nothing to give you anything you asked for. It would cost him nothing to give you any material possession. Do you want a bank vault filled with money? It'd just take a word from Jesus. Do you want a mountain of food, starting with just a few small loaves of bread? It'd take just a prayer from Jesus. Do you want life brought back to certain people? Maybe yourself? It would take just a word from Jesus. Any material thing that you could ask for, it would cost Jesus almost nothing. Just a few words. A wave of his hand. What is the most costly thing that Jesus can give, Ben? We get to this answer.
With his life.
That's it. With his life. Jesus is not just the creator of life. He's not just the sustainer of life. But because he's the only one, God, who has existed before time even began. Because he's the one who's always ever existed, he is life itself. God is life. And what Jesus does is he takes on a body. He takes on human flesh so that he can give up his life. So that he can give up all that he is. So he can give up his very existence. That costs him more than just a few words, doesn't it? This is how we know what love is. Jesus laid down his life for us. The author of life faces death for our sakes. There's nothing in all of existence that would have cost him more other than to lay his life down. And in doing that, he provides a definition of love, which is love that gives its absolute all. Love that holds nothing back. Love that is sacrificial. Love that is costly. Love that doesn't just give out of what it's got left at the end. I'll share the bits that I've got spare. Love that gives all it has and all that it is. Love that gives to the fullest extent. The second characteristic of this love that Jesus shows us is this love is for the benefit of other people. Why is it that Jesus laid down his life? Verse 16, Jesus Christ laid down his life for himself. No, I've read it wrong. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. He laid down his life for us. Who was the chief beneficiary? Who benefited most when Christ died? Christians. When Christ was dying on the cross, what he was doing, he was taking a penalty that we owed, a debt that was ours, that laid on our head. We were the cause of it. We'd caused the problem. And he took it upon himself. And he paid the penalty. He was dealing with a problem that we'd caused, that we'd got ourselves into. He was paying the debt for our sin. It was our problem, our mess, and he took it on himself. He would have had every right, as the perfect, holy God of heaven, to totally ignore the state that we're in, to totally ignore the world in its sin. He's holy, he's righteous, he can do no other. And yet he chose to take our problems, our sin, our hurt upon himself. And in so doing, he pays the penalty that we could never afford to pay. He paid that penalty of eternal separation from the God of all goodness. He paid that penalty of eternal anger from God. And he paid it on the cross for ourselves. And he paid it not just for one or two individuals. Not just for a selected few. He paid it for all those. All who would believe in him. All who would trust in him and accept his sacrifice on our behalf. And so if you're not a Christian this morning, I would just urge you to consider, are you benefiting from Christ's main work? Are you benefiting from this great act of love that Jesus has shown us? Are you trusting Christ? Have your sins been transferred onto him? Has he paid the penalty that stands on your head? He's the only one who can rescue us from that situation. He's the only one who can pay the debt for our sin. Have you trusted him? Jesus shows us love that is for the benefit of other people. And thirdly, Jesus shows us love that takes the initiative. Notice who's doing most of the work in verse 16. Jesus Christ laid down his life. We've sung about this a few times actually this morning. How is it that Jesus, who is the author of life, who is life itself, he's got life in it, he is life, okay? How is it that this man could be killed? How is it that the Romans could put to death life? How is it that the Jews could kill the Creator? In fact, the Bible teaches us, Jesus speaks in his own words, that when he died, it wasn't so much that his life was being ripped away from him. It wasn't so much that his life was being snatched from him. But that he came in order to lay it down. He came in order to give it up. And so even before he was born, he knew he was coming for the express purpose of giving up his life. His death on the cross isn't just some consequence of some unfortunate events and some people who didn't like him. Of course, it is that in part, but it's much more. It's Jesus willingly giving up his life as a sacrifice for those who will trust him. This type of love is a love that's so strong that it's hard to find examples or illustrations of it. But some of you might know the story of a chap called Lawrence Oates. And he was part of a British expedition to the South Pole. And they were in a race to try and get there first. Anyway, they lost. But on the way back to base camp, as it were, Lawrence Oates was the leader of his team, and he was getting ill. He was getting tired. He was dying, really. And he knew that the longer he stayed with his team, the less chance they had of making it back alive. The more food he was eating up, the slower they would have to walk. And so one day, while they're in their little hut, camping out, trying to weather a storm, Lawrence Oates got up and said, "I'm going for a short walk. I might be some time." And he walked out the door, and he never came back. And he did that knowing, purposely, dying, in order to save the rest of his team. That's about the closest example I can find of somebody willingly giving up their lives in order to save another. But even that example that Lawrence Oates gives us is nothing in comparison to what Jesus has done. You see, Lawrence Oates was reacting to a situation. He probably only decided to do that maybe 1 or 2 days before he actually did it. Jesus, even before his birth as a child, knew that this was the purpose that he was coming for. Lawrence Oates was able to save perhaps 1 or 2 men. Jesus was able to save all who would believe him. The death that Lawrence Oates suffered was inevitable anyway. Jesus would never have died unless he willingly chose to give up his life for our sakes. The love that Jesus demonstrates to us is love that takes the initiative. It doesn't sit quietly in the corner waiting for somebody to come and ask. It's love that takes the first step, goes looking for opportunity to show itself, saving those that even perhaps don't want to know at the time. It's a love that seeks out the benefit for others. It's a love that goes looking for opportunity to show itself. And having given us this practical example of what love is, John means, he then goes on to finish the verse. This is what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And he says to Christians, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. He gives us this enormous challenge. Are you a Christian? You've got to be showing this same type of love that Jesus has shown you. Show the same type of love to the others, the other Christians, your brothers and sisters, the others in your church, the others in other churches, the other brothers and sisters you have across the globe. Show this same type of love that Jesus showed you to them. Now, for those who've got a very, perhaps, individualistic view of Christianity, you know, perhaps you turn up on a Sunday to get a spiritual shot of, you know, good teaching and encouragement to last you through the week. If this is the way you view Christianity, if this is the way you view church, you turn up and get help, you turn up and get encouraged, you turn up and get sent out to do the rest of your week, then really it's going to challenge the way you see the church. Because it's saying being part of the church is not primarily for your encouragement. Your being part of the church is primarily to help and serve and love and care for the others. And just like we were explaining to the children earlier, that could be in all sorts of different ways. Not everybody's going to do it in the same way. But that's the goal. That's the primary aim. That we should love one another. So we're called to love one another in sacrificial ways. Just like Jesus loved us sacrificially. Ways that are costly. Not reserving some back for ourselves. Not getting all that we want to do first and then sharing what we have left. But loving one another sacrificially. It means our love for one another is for the benefit of the other person, not for our benefit. Not to gain us praise, but to love and care and help and build up the one that we are loving. It's not a kind of self-help, pat one another on the back, mutually beneficial, swap shop kind of love. It's a love that is willing to lend without seeing it repaid. It's a love that's willing to show hospitality without getting a return invite. It's love that is willing to absorb costs without even looking for a thank you or perhaps a sorry. It's love that shares the burden of problems that aren't our own. It's love that dives into the mess that people have made for themselves, their fault, and we dive in with them to help them and love them and care for them. And it's a love that takes initiative. It doesn't just sit at home, waiting for the letter to come through, waiting for someone to pick up the phone to ask for help. It's a love that thinks about those that we're in touch with. How can I help them? How can I be loving? How can I be sharing with them? It's this type of love rebukes us, you know, for the times when we're happy to pray for someone at a prayer meeting, and then we just forget all about the issue, don't we? Until perhaps the next prayer meeting comes up. If ever it does. It rebukes us for the times when we don't know the situations or the difficulties that our fellow brothers and sisters are going through. This type of love that Jesus has shown us takes initiative. It doesn't wait for these opportunities to come knocking. It goes out looking for them. And if perhaps you're wondering this morning, what area of life should you start with? If you want to take a step of obedience in loving others in the church in this way, where can you start? What's the best place to start? Hospitality? Prayer? Teaching? Good options. But John gives us one specific example. And I'm going to close my sermon this morning just by reading verse 17 to us. And as we read this verse, I don't want you to approach it with sort of your guard up, defending, ready to justify and defend yourself. But if you believe that God's word is useful for teaching and rebuking and instructing in righteousness, as we read this verse, let those words come clattering down through the centuries and hit us square in the jaw with a call to action. Verse 17. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? You want to know where to start by loving others? Start with your material possessions. We'll close there and sing our final song, Beneath the Cross of Jesus. This song first points us towards the cross, where we have been loved, Christians, where we have been loved by Jesus with his sacrificial love. But also, then it goes on to point us towards how we can care and love and be part of the church that God has put us in. We'll stand and sing Beneath the Cross of Jesus, and then I'll hand over back to Roy.